The night may be long and the dark may be deep, but the answers are there to be found. Whether it's the normal, the abnormal, or the paranormal, you're in the right place. Let's go beyond reality.
Welcome to the program. Great to have you all along tonight. Stephanie McGill will be with us to talk about synchronicities regarding her husband's heart transplant. And also, she hosts a Facebook page called My Dream. So we'll be talking about all of that with Stephanie. It's Beyond Reality. We'll be right back. Please support the program. Go to patreon.com/Johaw. That's J-O-H-A-W. Stephanie McGill is our guest for the second part of the program. We're going to talk about her synchronicities regarding her husband's heart transplant. Also, a Facebook page called My Dreams, which is a forum for people to post about their dreams and discuss them. Stephanie has prophetic dreams, and we're going to talk about that as well. Stephanie, welcome to Beyond Reality. It's great to have you here.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it very much. Yeah. I'm an avid listener.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much. I'm glad to have you here. I've been excited to hear your story. I don't know where you want to start, but I know that a lot of this is related to an experience with your husband and his heart transplant as a result from muscular dystrophy. Tell us what your husband's been afflicted with.
He has a strand of muscular dystrophy called Becker's muscular dystrophy, and it differs from your typical Duchenne's that you see on the Jerry's Kids telethon, you know, back when we were kids.
Right.
This is a strand that it affects usually happens in men, and it affects them later in life. My husband wasn't diagnosed until he was 29, and it is a genetic defect. It's a gene deletion. So his muscles don't regenerate as like yours and I do. We go out for a run or work out, and we do minuscule damages to our muscles, little tears and rips. And our muscles are healthy enough to recover. His are not. So he, your heart's a muscle. So
right.
It affected him differently. He has three other brothers, and two are confirmed that have Becker's as well, and it's affecting them each differently. So his little brother can't walk. He struggles, and he's like 5 years younger than my husband, who's 55. And then his older brother, it didn't affect him until way later in life. And so it's affecting him differently, too. But they all have a little bit of heart issues, but my husband's the one who really got the heart issues. It caused something called cardiomyopathy, non-ischemic cardiomyopathy,
mm-hmm.
which is an enlarging of the left ventricle, and his heart function was decreased down. At the time of transplant, his heart was only functioning at 15%.
Oh, wow.
There's something called an ejection fraction, which however much blood your heart takes in through the right atrium, it will expel 50 to 75% of that blood to your extremities, and his was down to 15%. Then when you get below 30%, that's when they start talking about internal defibrillators, which he's had two, because it can make your heart go into something called ventricular tachycardia, which he had a chronic case of ventricular tachycardia. But that's where your heart beats so fast that it cannot pump the blood to your extremities. Therefore, you pass out. It can cause brain damage. It can cause death. And that's where we were. He's, like I said, he had two internal defibrillators, and he was shocked. I think the most accurate count we had was 47 times.
Oh, wow.
In a 10-year span of time.
Now, I'm assuming you're not a medical student or a physician, but, man, you obviously have had to do a lot of learning. And, you're speaking this in terms that most people wouldn't understand, and you clearly understand it very well.
I do, and it's funny because we've struggled for this since 2009. It was the first time he ever passed out. We were in the middle of a restaurant. We kind of laugh about it because he was bending over or kind of leaning over to get his wallet to pay the bill, and he said, "Oh, I feel a little," and he passed out. And so, and we got a free meal because we had to call 911, and I they were taking him out, I said, I'm freaking out and almost passed out myself. And, cause I had never dealt with anything like that. We didn't know at the time what was going on. I thought he had a heart attack. And, the waiter said that, I said, let me take care of this bill. And I'm kind of freaking out and crying a little. He said, no, I got it. So it was kind of a joke. Every time it was time to pay the bill, we'd say, okay, now, you know. But,
well, it's nice that you
really
can. It's nice that you can find some levity in it as well, you know, because it's a serious situation. You were probably very scared at the time.
Oh, I have been more scared in the last 10 years than I have in my entire life. And I am the mother of two of my biological children, and I've helped raise three stepchildren. My first husband had two that I helped raise, and then we divorced. And then my husband, Brian, now has a son that I helped raise.
Wow.
So, you know, this is the hardest thing I've ever been through, and that includes motherhood. So that says something.
So let's talk about the synchronicities, the things that surround this circumstance and this situation that you that make you raise an eyebrow, and I know you're quite confident these synchronicities are real.
Absolutely. Let's start with when I was first off, let's talk about the defibrillator. I told you he's had two defibrillators and was shocked 47 times.
Right.
I was there for every single one, and our children were there for none. They have never witnessed their father being shocked. And our boys are 20, 21, and 28. So this has been over the last 10 years. So, you know, having an 11 and a 12-year-old or a 10 and 11-year-old with someone with this, you know, severe of a health issue, you know, you want to protect your kids. So they've never been there. They have always just left. Where they were visiting their dad, and their dad lives in Florida, so they were visiting their dad when all this was going on. They were there at the hospital visiting and saw, you know, him in the hospital and quite serious at times, but they never witnessed the actual shock, which out of 47 times, and I was there for everyone. He was never alone. I was always there with him to try to, you know, to get help and to calm him down, because it's very serious. It's not a fun thing to be shocked internally at all.
And the odds of you being there each one of those 47 times and none of your children being there any of those 47 times, those have to be astronomical odds if it was random.
Absolutely. And something else, you would look at my husband. He's 6'1". He's a big guy, you know. You look at him, and you think he could move a mountain. And, you know, he was a Marine, and that shocks people. His neurologist was Dr. Jerry Mendel, who is the one of the leading physicians in the nation for muscular dystrophy, and he works really closely with the MDA. So he was like, I cannot believe that you have Becker's muscular dystrophy, and you are a Marine. And he was. You know, my husband, he struggled a little bit through it, but he got through it.
Was he aware that he had the condition when he became a Marine?
No.
No.
He was not diagnosed until he's 29 years old.
Right, okay.
And he woke up one day, he partied the night before, woke up and went to the restroom, and then couldn't get off the toilet. He couldn't move. He had to literally drag himself to the phone to call 911.
That was the first experience he had, which resulted in the diagnosis.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So the 47 shock events where you were present for all and the children were present for none, that's pretty powerful in itself. What else are we talking about here?
He's very strong, and you would look at him and you wouldn't think that he has anything wrong with him. He actually was feeling quite well. I mean, he felt good. They had changed the medications and he was feeling well. But in 2018, he he passed out and got shocked, and he face planted. When I say face planted, he broke his nose. He broke his face. Geez. It was terrible. We were walking downtown. We live in near Columbus, Ohio. We were walking downtown, meeting friends, or we were going to a restaurant there, and we never made it because he fell. And when they did that, they decided to start really looking at his heart again and doing echocardiograms and right heart catheters and things like that, which usually you do a heart catheter, they go in through the left. The right heart catheter tells them more. So they decided that this was in May of 2018, so they started doing all that. And about March of 2019, they said, we're on the fence here. You're really at that tipping point where you're going to probably need to get ready for heart transplant. So last year, he spent all summer getting going to doctors. You have to be cleared through every doctor that you can. Infectious disease, neurology, gastroenterologist, dental, you name it, you have to be cleared. So he spent all summer last year and, getting ready. And we had sold our house and we were going to build. We decided not to build. So we were renting an apartment. We'd been there for a couple years and we've been wanting to buy. And he says, let's buy a house. It's July. I said, okay. He says, it's a good time to buy a house. We're going to buy a house. I said, okay. So we found our house. We worked to, get all of our ducks in a row and money saved up. And we signed on our house in September, I think September 4th. We moved in September 14th. His son was getting married, and he lives in Missouri, so we drove out. October 5th was his son's wedding. And we drove out to Missouri for the wedding on October 6th. We were leaving to come back home, and we stopped halfway between Missouri and Columbus and stayed in Terre Haute, Indiana at a hotel because, that's a long trip. We try to take it in 2 days.
Sure, yeah.
And I woke up in the middle of the night, and he was breathing funny, and I couldn't wake him up. And then all of a sudden, he was talking to me. And I said, oh, my God, did you get shocked? He said, I don't know. He said, I didn't like that feeling. It was weird. And I think he got shocked. So we stayed up all night and checked his vitals and checked his pulse and made sure that he wasn't going to be having any other issues. And we decided that I was going to drive home. When anytime you get shocked, you can't drive for 3 to 6 months. It's like having a seizure.
Oh, wow.
Because they don't know when it's going to come.
Yeah.
Right. So I drove us the rest of the way home. It was like a 4.5-hour drive on the way home. And he didn't have any issues while we were on the road. He had, because he has an internal defibrillator, we could send a remote access reading to the doctor. So we came home, and it's still in boxes, by the way. We're still in boxes. We just moved in 2 weeks before to our new house. So this was by October 7th when we got home, sent a remote, went to bed. The next morning he got up, and I heard something downstairs, and I kind of hollered for him. He didn't answer me. And I was getting up out of bed, and all of a sudden I hear, honey, call 911. I just woke up on the floor. He had passed out on October 8th. Mm. So October 8th, he goes into the hospital. We get there. We thought maybe they'd tweak some medication. They said, nope, it's time. We have no more play with your medications. It can now turn toxic. It's time for your heart transplant. And they said, you're not leaving here until you get a heart. So that's another synchronicity. We were on the road. We were gone. Well, first off, not only that, we bought a house. We decided we were going to buy a house. And it came out of the blue. We were perfectly content in this, cute, very nice apartment that we were living in. And he says, I want to buy a house. So we bought a house. Then we move in, and then we travel, 600 miles. Both ways, and he gets shocked in bed. He's not going to fall and hurt himself. Mm-hmm. He wasn't driving.
Right.
And we get home. He passes out. Goes to the hospital.
What is the? I'm not sure I understand the importance of the buying the house as a synchronicity. What's the connection there?
Because it happened so fast. We were in our house less than 3 weeks. before this happened. And he was expecting to, he felt so good that he was expecting to not have to have a heart transplant. He was actually hoping like another 3 to 5 years with his original heart. You know, he said, "All those doctors are crazy. I feel great, you know." And, you know, they say, you know, just listen to us. So we did. You know, he did what they asked him to do. But that was a goal. That was something that we've always wanted to do. When we got together, I owned the house that we lived in, and he'd never bought a house before. So when we sold the house as a married couple, but it was my home when we got together, got married. And that was a goal for him. He wanted to buy a house. And I kind of feel like that was a something that he was a whole person. His whole body bought this house.
Right.
And he did it 3 weeks before he then had to get a new heart. I mean, that to me, that makes sense. Some people might think I'm stretching that, but it's
okay. Sure. That's fine. So he's in the hospital now. He's told he can't leave until he gets a new heart.
Right. So a week later, they do whatever testing needs to be done, and a week later it's October 15th. October 15th is a very very highly significant day in my family. We have three family members born on October 15th, two uncles and a nephew. My son, who's 20, well, was 19 at the time, had got a job with the federal government as a contractor, and they hired him on permanent on October 15th. That was his first day as a federal employee at 19 years old. And then that's the day that my husband was listed for his heart transplant. So October 15th is extremely significant. Something that I will never forget, a date I will never forget.
Okay. So where do you think these synchronicities come from? Why do you think they happen? Yeah. Is it spiritually guided?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll get a little bit into this before, but, you know, people talk about past lives and stuff, and, you know, you can believe in them or you don't. But I honestly believe that we have a contract, our soul has a contract, that we are set on this earth to do something. And I truly and honestly believe I'm supposed to be with my husband. I'm supposed to be his advocate, and because I've been preparing for this my whole life, and we can talk about that here in a minute. But if October 15th he gets listed, and in 2 days he receives a heart.
Wow.
He was on the list for 2 days. October 17th they call me and say, "We've got a heart. Come in. You know, we got to get him ready." So he's in surgery. Now, you know, we've got him ready. He's in surgery. Everybody's, the whole family's there. My mom comes to me. Now, my husband was a priority two. You know, you're listed as priority. Priority one is the highest. My husband was a priority two. They could have gone 1,000 miles away to get this heart. Okay, they could have been up to 1,000 miles in any direction. And that, you know, that says a lot, too, because, you know, if you're not anything below a 2, they only have a 500-mile radius. And so he's in surgery, and my mom comes to me. She says, "Stephanie, there were two deaths right around the corner from us. We live in a suburb called Canal Winchester, and these deaths were in Gahanna, which is 20 minutes. It's like, you know, less than 15 miles away." And I said, "Oh, Mom, you know, yeah, it links up and it's, you know, time-wise, whatever, but his heart could have come from 1,000 miles away. You don't know who it is." And the only clues that the doctor told us before he had his heart transplant, that it was a fit heart and a young heart. So, but it's a good heart for him. And, you know, something else people don't realize, organ donors, your physiology, your physical, my husband's 6'1". They have to have a heart big enough to fit a large man.
Yeah, it's got to be, the body types have to be somewhat similar.
Right, not just blood types and antibodies and all that kind of stuff, but you have to have the same physical makeup. So she tells me that, you know, and I'm like, and what she was talking about, there was a young man, a senior in high school, who was in a car accident. And on the same day, his football coach died. And I was so wrapped up in him. I didn't watch the news. I didn't know anything about the story. So, you know, fast forward, my husband has a heart transplant. The new heart goes into shock. When your heart goes into shock, the rest of your organs go into shock because they're not getting the amount of blood and oxygen needed to keep you going.
Right.
So he had something called encephalopathy, which is your liver enzyme spike. His heart wasn't pumping efficiently enough in order to get all the water off of him. So they had to start dialysis. They also introduced something called an RVAD, a right ventricular assist device, and basically it's an electrical thing that goes into his neck. It's a machine that helps his heart pump. It goes in through his neck and puts electrodes into his heart. And it works as like physical therapy. It helps the heart pump to get it stronger. So he spent like 2 weeks, you know, intubated on all these machines, trying to get him awake and able to sustain this new heart to sustain.
But he'd already had the heart. You know? The new heart was already in him, right? That had already been
correct.
Done. So he was struggling with the new heart.
Exactly. So, you know, we get him kind of around. And encephalopathy is something where he did have that. That's where I talk about the liver enzymes are high. And that, if you know of anyone who's ever had that, it's they can hallucinate.
Yeah, my mother died from liver failure, and I went through all of that. So I know exactly what you're talking about, yeah.
Yes. So he's finally able to talk. It's actually Halloween night. They extubate him, and he's able to talk, and he's kind of in his right mind, but he's still a little loopy. He's still a little out there. Couple days later, it was probably about 4 or 5 days after it was Halloween, so like October or November 4th or 5th, and he looks at me, and he talks about, you know, eating chicken and ice cream, which he hadn't had anything like that. But one of the first things he asked for was a Pepsi. And my husband's not I call it pop. Some people call it soda, whatever you call it.
That's a raging debate on this program all of the time.
I know.
Oh, you do
pop.
Know. Okay. It's soda, but okay, go ahead.
So he doesn't drink soda pop. And when he does, he prefers Coke. And, you know, they always talk about how people with transplants, they take on attributes of their donors. And I thought, that kind of made me think, I wonder if his donor was a Pepsi drinker. Because he didn't ask for Coke, he's asking for Pepsi. And I know that some people say, well, that's kind of nothing. But in my mind, I go with one of those two, and I'm diehard. I don't deviate. So, anyway. Then a little bit later, he looks at me and he says, why was I in a car with a coach?
Hmm.
And he said that. And I said, what are you talking about? I said, you went in a car with a coach. He said, I was in a car with a coach. And ding, 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 you know, red flags went up in my head, like, oh, my gosh. And there's a different story to this, but this is what my mom would call a God wink, okay? Something said to make you think or make you know something without knowing. Okay. So, what had happened, the story behind this, a couple days after he was extubated and was able to talk, he was in intensive care and they had visiting hours. I go in for the final visiting hours and they had done the shift change with the nurses. And Ryan was used to seeing female nurses. This time he had a male nurse. And this male nurse, he was kind of creepy. I mean, there's no other way to put that. He would have creeped me out if he was my nurse. That's all I got to say. And when I walked in, my husband says, "You got to get me out of here. There's been a terrible mistake. I got to get out of here." And I kept saying, "What? What? You're right where you need to be." And he says, "I got to get back to the hospital." I said, "You are in the hospital. You haven't left this room." He says, "I got to get back to the right hospital." And I said, then I realized that, and because he kept looking at this creepy nurse out of the corner of his eye, you know, looking at me and then looking at the nurse. And I said, "This is, you know, your new nurse." And then I introduced him, and it calmed him down. But what it was is that in his mind, this nurse looked like a coach from when he was in high school. And he felt like this guy had kidnapped him. He said he thought he was in a basement somewhere. And that's where this whole, why was I in a car with a coach? But then I took it something totally different. So I go and I look, and I find the story, and I watch it, and I cry. And I look up this person, the mother, and I find that there's a GoFundMe page, and I share it, and I donate to it, and I raise all kinds of awareness. This is in November. So I find, you know, all these little things. And, of course, there's other things that he said. Something like, I told you, he ate chicken and ice cream.
Right.
And he did all this stuff that he didn't do. So fast forward, my husband had to go through a lot of therapy. He's finally recovered enough to come home. And he comes home December 19th. In the meantime, we have something called Lifeline of Ohio, which is a link between donors and the donor families and the recipients.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband gets a call and says, "I have a letter for you. Do you want it?" So they mail the letter to us. December 23rd, my husband gets the letter, opens it up, and sure enough, it was the young man who died in the car accident.
Oh, wow.
That was his donor. And that heart could have come from 1,000 miles away, but it came from right in our own backyard.
Wow.
And so we reach out to the family via Facebook. We find them. We talk. We haven't met them yet because, of course, then this whole COVID crap happened and no one can go anywhere or do anything.
Right.
So once all this goes away, then we're finally going to meet the family. But we've spoken to them, chatted with them online. And, you know, of course, you say, you know, you talk to the mother of the child who lost his life. Then everyone, you become friends with them. Then she tells, and so you become friends with the whole family.
Right.
And one of the things that they talk about was the grandkids going to the grandmother's house and doing Pepsi shots. You know, they had like little shot glasses, and they were doing Pepsi shots. And there goes the Pepsi thing.
Wow.
Like that's what they drink. You know, those little things. But just those little God winks, and the fact that I went to, you know, why was I in a car with a coach? That was the most significant.
Sure.
That made me go, wow.
That's pretty amazing stuff. And obviously, you've been given, and your husband specifically, been given an amazing gift by that young man. And I'm sure the family is somewhat comforted knowing that some good came out of it as well. You know, despite the terrible tragedy to lose somebody in an accident like that. But how's your husband doing now?
He's doing wonderful. He's laying here listening to me.
Oh, that's
great. He's on the couch listening to me talk.
Well, that's awesome. We're going to run out of time here, Stephanie, and I want to ask you about the Facebook page related to the dreams. What's that about?
That is, I've had prophetic dreams on and off my entire life, deja vus and things like that. And I've gone through a spiritual awakening. I can't say awakening. I've just finally decided that I'm going to do my own thing. I don't care what anybody else says. I've known how I felt my whole life. So I would talk to family members and chatting on texts and Facebook messengers. And, you know, they'll say, you know, you predicted this and you predicted this. I predicted the March 5th tornado in Tennessee, and I did. I forgot that I had predicted it. I had sent a message to my cousin, and she said, you know, you predicted that. So I decided to make this dream page because you say something, people think you're crazy. It just so happened, you know, that snow you guys got last week? Mm-hmm. April 23rd, I predicted it. And I also predicted that y'all would get flooding after the snow because of torrential rain. Guess what? Ohio and Michigan's the one who got the flooding, not upstate New York. We're flooded here big time. But it's those kind of things.
And this, like, this comes to you in dreams? When you say you predicted this stuff, it all comes to you through dreams?
It's like this, the in between sleep and awake, you know, when you're drifting off and you could feel yourself tingle because you're falling asleep and you start dreaming of pink elephants or, you know, whatever.
Right.
It's right there. And then there will be a vision that comes to me. You know how in the movies people have a vision and they sit up in bed and they jerk awake? It's almost that feeling. I don't sit up in bed, but I once I see it, I jerk awake. I'm awake instantly, and I know. And it's a feeling. It's not a normal dream. It's a feeling. You can tell a prophetic dream versus just some normal strange dream that you have. So I decided I'm going to make this page, and if somebody wants to, I put in there what I dream, because I kind of want to make a record of it before it happens. You know, I can say, yeah, hey, I predicted that. But if I don't have any proof of it, of what I said and what actually happened, then they're like, sure you did, you know. So it's something like that. That way, in no judgment. If you think that, you know, there's UFOs are going to attack us and you say it's going to happen on May 21st, you know, 2020, you put it on there. And we're going to read it and we're going to take what you say into account, and then if it happens, it happens. It doesn't, it doesn't.
How do people get involved? How do people get involved?
Well, it's kind of new. They just couldn't. I don't have any questions. You know, some people are like, do you have any rule? You have to answer all their questions to be able to be admitted. But they can just request, you know, I'll kind of, you know, just say yes. You know, I'll probably have to streamline that a little bit.
Okay, so let me just make sure I understand.
It's called My Dreams.
It's called My Dreams. It's on Facebook. And people can find the group, and they can ask to become a member, right?
Exactly. And then I've had a few.
And then you approve them.
Right.
Got it. And then once part of the group, they can share whatever dreams they want to share. And basically, it's an effort to put it on the record so that you can go back, or anyone can go back and say, hey, on this date, I had the dream about this, and it happened.
Right. It's kind of like my online dream blog.
Yeah, cool.
And it's not just for me. It's for anyone. And if they want to share, they're more than welcome to.
That's great. So, I know you had a whole bunch of other things we were going to try to get to tonight as well, but we just ran out of time. So you know what we'll have to do is we'll try to get you to come back, because I would like to hear more of your story and more of the things that you've done and experienced, because I know there's more to it than what we've talked about tonight.
Yeah, I do want to say this real quick, because I know you're out of time. I have been preparing for this my entire life. My aunt, who was like my mother, she's my mother's sister. In 1987, she had a kidney transplant. And I have been raised under those transplant umbrellas.
Oh, wow.
Of rules, the umbrella rules. And so much of that played into his care. And you said I sound like I'm a medical professional, and I'm not. And even the doctors, they would get mad at me because I would challenge them. They'd look at me and say, are you a nurse? And they'd say, no, I have common sense. And that's kind of where I was going. But I have so many more synchronicities that I could go on and on about. But those are the basics, the major ones. But when people talk about they don't believe that you can take on traits of your donors, I don't believe that for a second.
Yeah, that's...
There's cell memory.
That's really,
it really is.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. Again, thank you for sharing all of that with us. Say hello to your husband for us. Tell him, you know, we're happy that he's recovered and doing well. And like I said, Slick will reach out to you, Eddie, and see if we can schedule another time to have you come back on and share some more with us.
That would be wonderful.
Beyond Reality Paranormal is hosted by JV Johnson and produced by Orion Palmer and Slick Eddie Edwards. Like us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Please consider supporting the program either through your podcast platform, click on the link in the description, or on Patreon at Joha Productions. If you'd like to be a guest on Beyond Reality Paranormal or you have a recommendation for a guest, contact our producer, Slick Eddie Edwards. Eddie is spelled with a Y at slickeddieedwards@gmail.com.